Music matters. Mm-mm. No. Music matters. That's worse. Music matters. Welcome to Music Matters Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Emily Williams-Birch, and today we're talking to my friend, Dr. Kevin Padworski. Now, Kevin is coming to you as a pianist slash organist slash jazz saxophonist who actually played in the bars in Philly in his undergrad and then on the organ at church on Sundays. One of my favorite little tidbits I just learned about Kevin today. Kevin is really awesome at unpacking how to use commercial music and technology from the frame of a composer who teaches choir and loves to educate his singers. We look at specific projects that he's using with his singers, both his middle schoolers and high schoolers, and he's working on adapting for his 100 and some odd community choir. These projects are available for you in the episode notes. But I really think there's a lot to gain as you listen to Kevin talk. Specifically, he says one of the most life-changing statements, that energy follows passion. And I think you'll hear Kevin's incredible passion for teaching music and making beautiful music and how to do so in a project-based technological world as we live into our unknown. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Dr. Kevin Padworski. One more thing. I didn't forget. Last week, I promised you a big announcement, and here it is. Drum roll, please. Music Ed Matters Patreon Teacher PD Week. Woo! That's a mouthful. During the week, we'll be releasing episodes every day that have to do with technique, like singing technique and boys' voices and girls' voices. We'll talk about different learning strategies for both virtual and in person. And then the best part, in addition to all these extra episodes, there'll be daily meetups, whether that's a welcome session or a coffee hour or a Q&A or a happy hour or a closing session. If you join us for this PD week, you'll have access to all of the recordings and all the playbacks of the virtuals for the whole year. And we get to be friends and really amp up the energy as we dive into the 2020-2021 school year. So I hope that you will consider joining us for the Music Ed Matters Teacher PD week, the first week of August. You can find out details in the episode notes or on my Facebook page, Emily Williams-Birch, or Instagram, Dr. MEB, or sign up today at patreon.com/musicedmatters, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And I sincerely cannot wait to share all of the things that we've been learning through this podcast platform with you that first week of August. All right, enough of me. Let's get into the real tips today. Here is Dr. Padworski.
Welcome to the show. I am excited to introduce you to Dr. Kevin Padworski. What's up, Kevin?
How you doing? Great to be here.
I'm so glad that you're here. I've been looking forward to this.
Likewise.
Such an excuse just to hang out and get some good content, obviously, but mostly hang out. You need to tell the listeners, who are you? Who is Dr. Kevin Padworski?
Sure. I'm an educator, conductor, and composer based out of Denver, Colorado. And I serve as the artistic director of the Colorado Chorale, which is a large 50-year-old volunteer community chorus, and the director of vocal music at Colorado Academy, which is a private school serving grades K through 12.
Do you teach all K through 12?
No, I do not. I have two amazing colleagues that teach full time that just do elementary. And then I just do middle school and upper school. But we have an awesome
musical
faculty.
You don't get to say just. You do middle school and high school, and that's a lot.
That's
so
true.
Are there two choirs, a middle school group and a high school group? How many choirs do you have?
I have a handful of choirs. So middle school has about three choirs between 6th, 7th, and 8th, and then their own kind of pop group that they do. And then upper school has a Y'all Come big concert choir, a chamber choir, and then something called Chanteurs, which is kind of like our touring chorus.
Fancy. And how long have you been at that academy?
1 year, which is a fabulous year in the year of quarantine to start at an institution.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, but it, I mean, it's been an awesome start thus far. I walked into some awesome, you know, shoes from the lady that preceded me. She was an incredible educator. She was there for 43 years. So it was quite a transition. And here we are. Weird year, but
weird
excited.
Okay, so you have a pop group, you have the typical choir group, you're also a composer. Tell us a little bit about your compositional style. You write choral music, but you also do commercial music. Tell us a little bit about your sound.
Sure. On the choral side of things, I'm traditionally published by a few publishing houses, and I guess my style, I suppose, is I'm a pianist primarily. I was a pianist organist all through college. And so my lens for getting into composition was being frustrated with boring piano parts for choral music. And so that was my first forte into composing, is like, let's write something that the pianist actually enjoys as a collaborator. And so that's how I started writing. So a lot of my pieces end up being challenging for the pianist, which is a whole nother conversation for how that gets published and what is doable for your typical pianists.
I hope my accompanist isn't listening, because if my accompanist is listening, he's going to send me a text and say, Dr. Birch, we have to do that. He's always looking for the hardest possible piano part to be challenged. He's also in 10th grade.
No, that's awesome. Anything.
Anyway, I'll have to send him to look at some of your music. Okay. Yeah. So you write from the piano perspective.
Yeah.
Is it mostly sacred? Who are you writing for?
I first started writing sacred because at the time, you know, right after my undergraduate degree, I was the director of music and organist at a church, and I was just not finding good repertoire that matched my ensemble, as many churches, I think, frequently are finding, right? Volunteer community choirs where I need a voicing to match my 3 tenors, 2 basses, and 20 sopranos. So I was writing to meet those needs initially. So it was initially sacred. And then quickly, as I went on to get a master's degree, I just looked at the world of choral music and the expanse there and all the influences, and quickly began writing for treble choirs because they're just the bomb.
Yes.
They're
the jam.
Treble choirs are amazing. And then after that, just started to explore with what else was out there, adding stuff like celeste and organ. And again, from a collaborator's perspective at the keyboard. How is it interesting aesthetically, musically, from the keyboard?
From the keyboard. So who were your biggest influences when you got to this master's degree and suddenly saw the world of choir? Who were you listening to? What choirs were you listening to? What other composers? Who were your influencers?
I was fortunate enough, I got my master's degree at University of Denver, private school in Denver here, because I was working. And we were able to bring in some pretty awesome composers. So one of the first people that came in was Morten Lauritzen. So I had, again, just a newbie in the choral world. I didn't really know who Morten Lauritzen was at the time. And of course, as the grad TA, I had to go pick him up at his hotel. And so I just had this awesome experience of having him play his pieces and have us record, do a recording session. And from that instant, seeing that a pianist speak about composition in a really intelligent way of the process, and regardless of the piece, I was just drawn to that. So I guess that was my first influence of seeing a pianist sit at the piano and make music. Kenneth Lample came, Tim DeCash came. We just had a lot of great people come through those doors during my master's degree, and I tried to soak up, I guess, choral trends from what we see from the school perspective, mm-hmm. because as educators, we see what high schoolers need versus middle schoolers versus obviously our pro and community ensembles. So, lots of different paths.
And how did that eventually lead to the commercial music side of things?
Yeah. So commercially, I guess, so I was a saxophone major alongside being an organ and music ed major. So all 4 hours a day I was playing saxophone. So that meant on weekends and weeknights I was playing in a bar in Philly during my undergrad, and
yes.
playing organ on Sundays. But that commercial side of it was me playing. I know, it was a good balance, good life balance.
That it's all about.
That means I was playing with some really awesome, industry musicians that were union guys playing the circuit on every single jazz house. They were playing the circuit on wedding bands. They were writing and doing their own commercial licks. They were hired to fly out to LA for 3 months and just do a whole bunch of sight read recordings. And I got to really appreciate that side of music making, which often somehow in education, when we go through a formal education for music ed or on a choral track or instrumental track, we don't really get to see that. If we're on that formal, again, education mm-hmm. track, there's not much of the commercial side of music. Obviously, right. there are established programs that walk through commercial music, but that was my first entree to that, literally playing through, you know, Autumn Leaves in every key every single night, and then learning how do I record that myself? How am I using free DAW platforms to record myself and make music that way? So I started making my first commercial music by playing with those guys and learning how to edit their tracks that they had put in. Do some balancing stuff from guys in their 80s that knew how sound was supposed to sound, whatever that meant. It all sounded like this magical cloud that was hovered around. But that was my entrance into commercial music. And so now it's transformed into me writing random commissions for a podcast tune or a commercial or a jingle in the background for this, you know, a school's opening assembly. Random okay. stuff.
That is, okay, what's the coolest commercial you've done so far?
Won't name the brand, I guess. I won't put out the brand because I'm not too proud of it anymore. But it was a commercial that was supposed to highlight contact lenses.
Okay.
And it's nothing to be proud of. So I knew you're going to ask me that. Well, what was your first thing or whatever?
No, that's you're right that we don't get that in our ed programs. There's so many things we have to learn, and obviously something has to fall by the wayside. But the fact that you had these experiences, what years were you playing in the bars in Philly?
So 2005 to 2008.
Okay, so you're playing in the bars in Philly. That's about the time that Audacity really, because we're the same age. That's about the time that Audacity really became a thing. I remember when that became free and everybody downloaded it.
Yep.
That was also kind of the end of mix CDs.
And totally.
Towards MP3s.
Totally.
What's the biggest change that you've made in technology and how you've grown as a commercial musician technology-wise?
Well, I think for all of us in the industry, it's regardless of age, the almost strikingly jarring shift from just analog sound to digital, even regardless of like what all the platforms that are out there, going from like an analog board to a digital board to Audacity to any one of these other DAWs, GarageBand, all the stuff that's free, that's quite a shift from someone that is literally used to taking an analog sound and having it be transferred. And I think that the coolest thing that happened was the rise of the free platforms, right? Like Audacity, like mm-hmm. GarageBand that's been made available through Apple, and the access. That's the biggest thing. It doesn't take someone going out and buying gear anymore. Mm-hmm. It's just everyone has free access, which is really cool.
Right. I mean, sadly, we started to see, I remember during that time, I was really involved in Nashville with a company there, and to see the doors closing because people had everything they needed on their computers. You said something really funny earlier about how you know just enough about audio engineering to be dangerous.
Yep.
That was like, how did you learn, other than these guys that you were playing in the clubs with, how did you learn this stuff?
Sure. Again, my first job was director of music and organist at a church. Was a really mixed worship style. So not contemporary, not traditional, but like everything. So I think I was hired because I was a jazz guy and an organist, right? So I did the jazz to Zay service. I could play organ, I could play piano, I could play guitar, do all sorts of things. And so I quickly learned that I needed to figure out how to talk to my colleagues that sat behind the sound desk. And I had no knowledge of that, right? I didn't learn any of that. The most I knew was, hey, plug in the quarter inch into this jack when I was playing those gigs. No one taught me what it was doing, or, you know, a TRS, what is that at the end of the jack, or any of those things. So
went right over my head.
No, well, for all of us. I mean, I know enough to be dangerous, and I think that's the fun thing. It's exciting because, ooh, I know enough. But I only learned that because I actually went to a course. So like I signed up for a $1,000. I remember convincing the church staff to pay $1,000 to let me go to an audio engineering course where I got to sit in front of a soundboard, and just they walked everybody in the classroom through it, and we had to mix sound live, all 16 people. It was really cool, actually. And that's how I learned the basics of, like, what's a condenser mic? What's a cardioid pickup pattern? How much gain do I need to balance?
Cardioid, like, pickup pattern.
Yay! Which is a good thing, right?
Yes, such a good thing. Okay, so what I love is that you come to this commercial side with a choir person, with a piano organ background. You come from a different perspective. So you've used some of these ideas with your academy students. So for those of people listening, what are some ways that you can jump into this technology, commercial music, hitting the pop culture, and still achieve beautiful music, still achieve why we exist?
I think I would start by saying that energy follows passion always. Energy even begets passion. So if we're trying to connect with our students and have them be energized, start with your passion. So my passion happens to be composition. And so I view my classes through the lens of a composer, I guess maybe all of life through that lens. But I take my knowledge of composition and insert that content knowledge and passion into my courses, hopefully in a methodical and contextual process that enables me to provide more connections with my outlier students, right? So if I'm a choir teacher, or if I'm a basic music ed, and I have those kids that they're not connecting. Either it's a credit they had to check off, or it's something that they're mildly interested in, but they're terrified of singing, right? Mm-hmm. We have those outlier students. They will follow your passion. So you already have a passion, whatever that is for you, and you likely have the tools available to pursue that passion because it is your passion. So trust yourself that your students want to know what you're passionate about, and energy will follow that. So I guess I'd start with that. So through composition, that could be, for me, highlighting a particular composer and their music with whom a student might closely identify, or a particular part of the composition process for my singer-songwriter kids, or theory for my mathematicians and my engineering students or my physics kids, and technology for my computer science students. So looking at a DAW and opening it up and say, what's actually going on here in the coding? And how are we going to use, like, Flat or Soundtrap or any of these freewares to be able to engage with them? So I guess that's my quick ditty. And then there are specific projects that
Yeah, let's that talk work. About those. But when you do these things and reach your individual students, you know your passion and what you want them to achieve, and you're able to really touch every one of your students, which says a lot about how much time you spend building rapport. Do you see these projects come full circle? Do they eventually fall in love with the process of singing or the community of a choir? What are you seeing when you offer these options to your kids, to your students?
There's never 100%, oh, now my student is passionate about what I just shared with them, right? We have that nerd dream of, like, yes, share my passion, and it doesn't always follow suit. But what I do see comes full circle, as you said it, is that they have a broader understanding of the millions of facets of music making, right? Mm-hmm. If we just think about the choral context, well, someone's likely recording it. If you've heard a YouTube video of a good recording, someone has likely composed that music. Someone has gone through the process of learning how to sight sing. So that's another process. I mean, there are just a myriad of ways to approach music making. And that's what I see come full circle for them. Whereas before it was a one-dimensional process. I go to class, someone hands me a piece of music, I have to learn how to sing it, and then there's some sort of product, right? There's a rehearsal and a product, and this changes that. This adds facets and a way for them to connect that I think builds appreciation. If not their passion, at least an appreciation for the different facets that are involved.
Which is what we want. We want them to appreciate choir, to appreciate music, so that they will pass it along to their families, and we will have patrons for the rest of our life of music making for all those super gung-ho passionate ones that keep going in the field.
Indeed, yes.
I think what you said is exactly what we need to hear right now, as we're all in this planning phase of what are we going to do in the fall when we don't know what exactly is going to be choir. What does choir look like? I had one of my gay men chorus guys call me today and ask, what do you think choir is going to look like in a couple months? I don't know. But if you're looking at it from this multifaceted direction, maybe you can't sing together handing out the octavos, but what are other ways to go about it? So this is the perfect segue into some of your projects. Will you talk us through some of the projects that you've done?
Sure. And, you know, none of these are going to be too novel. Luckily, there are brilliant minds out there constantly racking their brains about this, trying to figure out some solutions and making them available to all of us. But one of the first ones, obviously, is accessing some sort of recording for your students to sing along to, and then uploading PDFs of your music online to sing along to. So that's like a basic, how do we keep our students singing and learning how to be autonomous in that process? And it's almost building practice skills. So I think that that's something I'd like to highlight about the process of like, how am I singing along to recording? If virtual choir is not going to be your end goal, which I'll let you cover on some other podcast, so I have to go down that rabbit hole. But if that's not the end of the process, I have taken my personal approach for it, this entire trimester quarantine land, Zoom land has been, is I'm developing practice skills. How are they listening to a practice track and learning to sing along to it? What are they gaining by doing that, other than I'm just trying to produce a product? So that's one path, obviously, that choir teachers could be considering. Another one is
the whole, wait, I want to make sure I got all the pieces. So you upload PDFs, you give them practice tracks, and you help them learn how to practice with them.
Absolutely. And part of it, this is a good segue, but part of it is being able to navigate online software that gives them those tools. I happen to use Soundtrap. GarageBand is what I was used to because it's just a great DAW. That means digital audio workstation. I just realized I keep saying things.
I knew what you meant, but I figured eventually I was going to have to say that either the intro or outro, but thank you. It stands for, say it one more time.
A DAW, D-A-W, is an acronym that stands for Digital Audio Workstation. And there are, I'm sure, 7,000,000,005 YouTube videos that are like, here are the 11 best free DAWs out there. but the GarageBand is honestly an excellent free DAW to use. But it's not really helpful for sharing. Being able to share those file sizes is just...
That's been my biggest
insurmountable sometimes. Mm-hmm. So when sharing with students, I think Soundtrap was a brilliant creation. So being able to upload MP3s directly into Soundtrap. So first making sure they're able to navigate it, which honestly takes all of 3 seconds because students anywhere, age of 12 to 18 are just brilliant when it comes to technology. So it literally will take 3 seconds of your time to show them how Soundtrap works. But setting them up with PDFs then. So I use Scannable, which is, again, another really easy, free PDF tool. For my community course, you know, trying to prep a Mozart Requiem, it takes not that long to go through an entire PV and scan it with an app like that. So uploading a PDF that they can use. I'm fortunate enough to be able to supply Fourscore for my students, which is a brilliant app for reading music. And then access to their specific practice tracks and just the accompaniment track and et cetera. So that's the process for that. And then building the practice skills of talking through what are our goals of singing through this right now and recording it? What are your goals? For me, that's making sure they have at least a handful of recordings. And that includes all of them. Like, listen to yourself at your worst and try and make yourself better, right?
So you have them record along the line. Like, you have them submit a first recording and an analysis and a second recording.
Absolutely. And then we walk through and have them analyze, what was the process? What were you attempting to learn here? And if they can't articulate it, then we go back and we say, well, how do we articulate our goals for practice before we even start?
Setting the goal. That's like a life transfer right there. Yeah.
Isn't it?
It is.
Raise the proverbial coffee mug at that one.
Yes. I'll toast my tea to that. Okay. So then what? What's another one? That's a great one.
Well, one right here is, so you're endeavoring on a podcast. And so I had my students use Soundtrap as their DAW to create this, but there isn't quite a podcast yet at my school. There will be in the fall now because of this project. And I wanted them to hypothesize a scenario where they have been commissioned to write the intro music to a podcast. So they had to submit to me what the theme of the podcast was, whether or not it was original, like they were coming up with their own Crime Junkies or whatever, or they were redoing a podcast that they already listened to, and they wanted to redo their intro music. So they had to tell me the theme, and they had to give me a little blurb about what the podcast was, and then create it given a list of things that they had to implement into their sounds. So they had to include one loop, a loop being a pre-recorded set of music that exists in Soundtrap's library. So they had to include at least one loop. They had to make a specific analog sound, so meaning recording something live, someone clapping, someone knocking on their table, whatever that is, be really creative with it. They have to have some sort of analog sound that they have recorded and used into their recording, at least three synthesizer patches, and yeah, I can't remember them all off the top of my head, but basically there was a set parameters for the project that they had to include that I hopefully to me demonstrated they had an understanding of how to use the tool, which is Soundtrap. And you come up with a neat end product of their creative side of composition that isn't daunting to those if we ask them to say, hey, compose 8 measures of a choral piece, right? It's right. A very different set of skills right. That is way more attainable.
But I can see how that could eventually lead to the student who just thrives at making this commercial track could easily mold into the next type of, I mean, to me, I'm thinking, great, you gave me stipulations. I can do a very rigid composition in that regards.
Totally. Right. And so I just had a middle schooler this week, Garrett, and he did all of his about the Shinto tradition in Japan. Huh. And that doesn't happen to be his cultural background. And he's just fascinated with it. So he's like all in now in creating a podcast about Japanese culture. And it's so cool that this tapped into another side of him. So
that's so incredible. So he's seen how to compose, how to use the DAW, how to set up a whole model. So he really could. I mean, the kid knows more than I did a month and a half ago.
Now, again, we're all at different areas of this journey. I am no expert either. And it's so fun learning alongside them, right? Mm-hmm. Having them do something so cool. I remember seeing the first time, you know, way back when someone showed me on GarageBand in college how to fade in or fade out a track. And I was like, oh my God, that blew my mind, right? How to just change the volume. And simple things like that can be mind-blowing to these students, that everything can be edited. A MIDI track, as soon as it's MIDI, you can change any aspect of it, the velocity of the note, the tempo, the duration, I mean, everything. So it's really cool having them just, you know, have their eyes opened in that regard.
But you said something too, you're learning alongside them. You don't have all the answers. You don't know all the answers. And I think that's the scariest part, to jump into the unknown. I've been talking about that a lot, I think, on the podcast, because that's really where my mind is. The unknown of what's before, not being afraid to fall flat on your face.
Totally. Yeah, there's no way I know everything. And it's really cool having my technology savvy students, like a lot of my comp sci kids, talk to me about the coding behind it, because they've already learned in their comp sci class. Yeah, I've got some brilliant students at my school.
I was going to say, you can major in computer science in high school? Like, is this how this works?
These kids are pretty, yeah, it's pretty tracked. It's awesome. Like right now, I guarantee they could be doing a coding job as a high schooler. So they were showing me the digital side of it. So like another platform is Flat.io, FLAT.io, and that's a notation software. And that's free. It's certainly not Sibelius, and it's not Finale, and it's not Dorico even. But for a freeware for notation that is cloud-based and shareable, it's awesome. And so they were walking through with me the coding behind it. And I don't know anything about coding. And I frankly don't care. As long as it's working for me, I'm super grateful to those people and their minds. My wife is one of them, a coder, and I don't understand a lick of it. But that's how they were able to connect, is something that they're passionate about. And energy follows passion. So if I ask them to renotate 4 measures of one of our octavos, which is one of my projects in Flat.io, they're like, oh, well, can I try coding it instead? I'm like, sure, yes. Absolutely. I don't know how you do that. I don't know how to set you up to do that, but please do. And then show us in class, show us over Zoom, you know, share your screen and show us how you did this. And that's how I'm learning so much about these kids' knowledge in their other courses and being able to have some cross collaboration. So
wait,
super
so
cool.
You had them renotate 4 measures from any of their octavos?
Yes.
So it was more than just a copy paste. Did they have to recompose it, or what were they just?
Yeah. So this was kind of a basic project, I took one of our octavos and they were assigned four measures. I went through my class roster, and in our octavo, they literally had to renotate in flat all of the parts that they saw for those particular four measures. The piano part, the accompaniment part, if there was an obbligato flute line, anything going on, they had to renotate it. And we had classes prior to that where we were learning how to navigate notation software, and I kind of gave them an inside scoop of how that works on the compositional side, right? Composers today in 2020 have to know how to notate and learn the process of engraving work. And so we kind of just did some overall understanding of the notation process, slightly touched on that could be a career path. If they're not right. Like,
I had to hire an engraver for my dissertation. I had to. I couldn't. I could write all day, but the engraving, I had to literally call and hire someone for hours and hours and hours to fix the hot mess that I made.
Totally. And they do it professionally, right? That's an awesome job.
That was their number one job. They were an engraver.
Totally. I mean, I use an engraver for all of my orchestral stuff. Like I would love to have the time to sit down and finish out all of my parts, but
no, thank you.
I want it right. Yeah. I want it correct and looking industry standard. So we talked about that. And so that was one of my assignments, and why that may seem tedious. Like I'll tell you as like a real talk, I was really self-conscious about that assignment. Cause I was like, is this just tedious? Is this tedium to have them go through the process? But ironically, they loved it because of the way that flat is set up. And that's what I was hoping, because they can all see each other's work. And
the community. Right? So it was still a community building.
It was
project.
A community process. So yes, it was an individual assignment. They had their own four measures. But my hope was, and this is what happened, because Flat.io is a cloud-based, you know, doc, just like Google Docs is, you can see everybody's work. So you can see people in tandem doing it, and they had to do it over Zoom. And so they were all talking together, and just, it was kind of honestly like a hangout time of them kind of doing some tedious work, but it ended up being really joyful and fun to just see them laugh at each other and learn the process, irregardless of what it takes to be able to notate things. How do I figure out a rhythm? How do I put a dot on a note? Like, what's the point? And it led to all those other questions. Like, oh, what is a dotted quarter note again? And why does that matter in my life? Like, yeah.
I want to be in your class. I would like to do all three of these projects, please. These are great. Do you have assignments that go along with these projects? Can we get these? I can link the PDFs in the episode notes if you're willing to share them.
Totally. Happy to.
I would love to do these. My singers would love these little projects. Yeah. I have a couple future composers in the group that would love to learn more about these free softwares.
Totally. And while I guess I'll just quickly add this, if you'll let me, you know, yes. As I've done this, because this is obviously my role as an educator in K-12 education, but I'm also, I have a large community choir. I have 110 people, and we're obviously in the time of trying to figure out what we're doing to sustain community when we, you know, likely anticipate a dark season. And so I've put out feelers about this sort of thing. You know, would this be, could I re-cater this to their demographic, which is, I have some of high school age, but clearly all the way up through much wiser than us.
Yes.
And they're all interested in this. They love everything about this, because I think that often they didn't get the chance to explore mm-hmm. these sides of music making. And they're curious. They're seeing virtual choirs sent everywhere. Well, mm-hmm. what went into that process? So I'm not doing everything, but I am trying to re-cater this for my community choir, to build community and let them explore these sides of music that, again, we aren't taught on the traditional track.
We don't have to be dark. We can still be together. And you said a great thing. Ask your choir what they want. I asked my girls what they wanted, and they said, we want to learn more music history, we want to learn more music theory, and we want to collaborate, even if it's Zoom collaboration.
Totally. Yeah, please ask your singers. Just yes. Please ask your singers. Listen
There's
to
so much
Dr.
More
Birch
creative.
Here.
Like,
yeah.
This is so, it's easy to talk to you. This time has flown by. I can't believe how easy this was. Before we go, is there any final thought or piece of wisdom for someone listening thinking, well, you know all about commercial music, I can't even do any of this. Well, do you have any thoughts for the naysayers or the scaredy cats out there?
Yeah. I would just, again, tie it to your passion. You already possess passion about something. It's find it again, right? If there's something about your music making process that you are passionate about, use that. Energy follows passion, always. And your students, believe it or not, really do care what you're passionate about. It always shows. That's why TED Talks are fascinating, because we watch people enthralled in their passions. Mm-hmm. And so therefore we listen, we hear that differently. And so use the passions that you have and tie them to the tools that are available to us, and be willing to learn them and be a learner alongside your students. So you have the passion and the tools available. Just do it. Jump in.
And we have the time right now.
That we do.
We do. And anyone listening, if you're the scaredy cat, I love you. It's going to be okay. I'll hold your hand. And we both got your back, right, Kevin?
Hear, hear.
This has been so much fun. I will put a lot of stuff in the episode notes, including the link to your beautiful website, because it is gorgeous and super easy to navigate. So I'll link to your website, and then I'll put a link to a Google folder where they can access these really great ideas. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Dr. Birch.
Dr. Podwortsky. Look how good I said that. I'm so proud. Okay. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thank you.
That's it, my friends. Three really great ways that you can use DAWs, digital audio workstations, that are free, and how you can learn alongside your singers as you take your passions and your energy follows your passion. Oh, I feel so motivated and so excited. If you want to look at any of the lesson plans that Kevin talked about today, you can check those out in the episode links below. There's also a link to his fabulous bio and places that you can go hear both his choral music and his commercial music. Above all, know that we are here for you. This is a community, and there is no better time than right now as we are making plans to go a million different directions and to shift no matter what comes before us. So please do reach out and let us be friends with you. Let us help you. Maybe you have a great idea and another way that we can use technology and projects to connect and build community within our singers. Above all, know that what you're doing matters, that you matter, and I'll see you next time on Music Matters.